Every morning when I was a kid, my mom used to wake me up with a cup of tea, sugar, a little bit of milk. She's English, and that's the way they have it in jolly old England, or so she claimed. I was training to be a singer from just about birth, and so I figured, oh, that tea would be good for my throat. I even remember that anytime I got a sore throat, my mom made me gargle with the worst tasting blend of hot water and a ton of salt. I have never been fond of salt, so to me, this was like Chinese water torture. Still, I did it. I figured it would be good for my throat. When I got older, a throat doctor told me to get a humidifier and sit in front of the darn thing for 15 minutes twice a day, inhaling the lovely, soothing mist. And this really made my nose run, not to mention that it kept making me cough. But still, I figured again, maybe it would be good for my throat. The older I got, the more crazy things I would hear about. What to eat and drink, what not to smoke, and all the things to avoid to keep my voice in perfect condition. Looking back now, I realize that most of what I was told was just a bunch of bunk. Somebody read an article in a magazine or saw something on TV or heard a celebrity say that that's what they do. But with all the wives' tales and myths floating around, I wanted to help you sort out the facts from the folklore and address the most common questions that come up regarding the care and feeding of the most precious communication tool that you have, your voice. Would you agree with me that it's a great idea to keep your general body in shape and eat well so that you can be at your best every day? Well, then it's not that much of a stretch to say that you should also keep your voice in top shape every day. After all, it's the one thing that you can't hide from anyone, unless you never speak. Now, I've drawn my conclusions about what works from my own experience and the impact I've seen on the voices and vocal health of thousands of students over the years. You'll find a whole range of techniques here for improving your voice from the inside out. Try even a few, and you'll feel and hear amazing changes. So, what's the number one thing that I can do right now, today, to keep my voice in great shape? Well, the answer to that is easy. Drink more water. There's nothing in the universe that makes your voice happier than water. And I know you're going to freak out when I tell you how much I want you to drink, but I want you to drink at least a half a gallon of water a day. And I don't mean the water that just happens to be in coffee or Coca-Cola. I mean the plain old wish-it-tasted-better water. My goal is to convince you just how important that water really is. Water is vital for your voice because it helps your body provide the lubrication that protects the vocal cords. The cords vibrate the whole time you're speaking, and in fact, they vibrate even when you're sleeping and dreaming of speaking. All that movement can easily be irritating, but when you take in enough water, the body produces the ideal protective substance, nice, watery phlegm. Like oil in an engine, it keeps the friction from damaging all the moving parts. Did you think that phlegm was a bad word? Well, you're partially right. I agree that the thick, yellowish gunk that gets coughed up in the sink is totally gross and not all that much fun. But the thin, watery type is a good thing, because if you didn't have enough of that stuff, you wouldn't be able to speak. Let's play a little what-if game. Put your hands together like you were praying. Now, just rub your hands together until I tell you to stop. By the way, don't do this while you're driving. Okay, are you rubbing? Because I didn't tell you to stop. Now let's imagine what would happen if you rubbed your hands together like this all day long. Well, first, your bare skin would start to turn red and get all swollen up. Then, if you continued for a long period of time, your palms and your fingers would protect themselves by developing calluses, which are just little extra layers of skin. If you've ever taken guitar lessons, you've seen how irritation from touching the strings makes calluses. Okay, Stop rubbing. Your vocal cords, when they're not properly lubricated with phlegm, do essentially the same thing. They rub together, and they start swelling and getting redder, and then they start to form their own variety of calluses called nodes or nodules. Make a peace sign with your index and middle finger. Now bring both fingers together and close up that V. Do you notice how your two fingers have created a very nice tight seam? Well, that's what the vocal cords look like when they're in the closed position. And when they're like that, the air can't get through. And that's a good thing. Now, open up your fingers again to the peace sign. Take your index finger from your other hand and put it right through the middle of that peace sign. Now close your two fingers right on top of it. Now that's kind of what it looks like when you have a node or a nodule on the vocal cords. Do you see how the cords and your fingers can't close all the way up like they did before? Now it's a lot harder for the vocal cords to do what they're supposed to do. Over the years, a lot of throat doctors just go for taking the calluses off your cords by surgery. As a matter of fact, just about every famous singer that you've ever loved had nodules or nodes on their cords at least one time or another during their career. Stars like Elton John, Whitney Houston, Kenny Rogers, and Billy Joel all had them removed surgically. So you say to me, if great professional singers get them, how the heck am I supposed to not get them? The answer is, you're supposed to drink more water. Don't get all paranoid about nodes, by the way. As long as you follow the Vocal Power program and remove all the strains and pressures from the voice, you're at an extremely low, low risk. I've worked with many of the top laryngologists in the country who send their patients to me before even considering surgery. With the right vocal techniques, exactly what I've been teaching you, I've been quite successful at eliminating the problem altogether. Okay, have I convinced you to drink a half gallon of water a day yet? Are you still worried about going to the bathroom too much? Well, while we're on the subject of bathrooms, I want to offer you an easy way to check if you are drinking enough water. For the average person, a half gallon, or roughly 8 glasses a day, is adequate. The kidneys tightly regulate the water content of our bodies, and under normal circumstances, they do an incredible job on at least 8 glasses. If you want to be sure you're drinking enough, just watch the color of your urine. When your system is adequately hydrated, it'll be clear. And if you're running low on water, it'll have a more yellowish color. Now keep in mind, if you use this test, that vitamins and medicines that you might be taking can significantly alter your urine color and distort the whole test's accuracy. Humans are more than 70% water, and we need to keep replenishing the source. Most of us don't realize that our bodies are losing water all the time, even at rest. We lose about a half a liter of water a day, and the amount increases with any activity. Even while I'm speaking, in my breath, I'm losing water. Now, how many of you experience dry mouth before you speak? You're feeling confident. You're about ready to get up and deliver the goods, and suddenly you feel like somebody just gave you a basketball to swallow. You try to swallow, but you just don't seem to have any saliva left. So what do? You grab for your bottle of water, you take a big swig, thinking that that'll moisten your mouth and your vocal cords. But unfortunately, the dry lump still in your throat has not gone away. The water that you drank, it didn't seem to have any positive effect at all. Do you know why? It's because there are two holes in the back part of the throat, one for food and liquid, and the other one for air. And when you drink, water goes down the food and liquid hole and doesn't go anywhere near the vocal cords. So the water you drink right now, hoping to help your throat right before you do your speech, that's not going to do the job. But the water you drank last night or hours ago can. The water gets absorbed by the intestinal tract, and then it's transported through the bloodstream, which acts as an elaborate sprinkler system, bringing moisture to all the tissues of the body. And that doesn't happen in a few minutes. Somebody once asked me if drinking a lot of water could ever wash all the vitamins and minerals out of the system. And my answer was, absolutely. If you drank 6, 8, or 10 gallons of water a day, what happens is your blood chemistry kind of goes out of whack. It's a condition called hyponatremia. But don't spend a lot of time worrying about that. It's going to be tough enough for you to drink 8 glasses of water a day, much less 8 gallons. Your body is designed to absorb the nutrition it needs. So a general rule to remember is, if you need it, your body will keep it. Well, now you know how I feel about water. What about all the other kinds of drinks? What I advise my clients to do is drink pure water. Coffee, tea, and soda have water in them, but they're not the same. The problem is that the added ingredients in these other substances can create a different kind of phlegm. Too much of the wrong kind. Like I said before, a little phlegm is good, but when your body begins to supply more than you need, the result isn't pretty. Your vocal cords can wind up covered with thick, sticky phlegm. It's a bit like having peanut butter all over the rim of the jar while you're trying to close the lid. Your cords can't meet completely, and as a result, it's harder to produce sound. Let's talk specifically about what those added ingredients are and why they can cause problems. First, caffeine. If you're a coffee, tea, or soda fan, you may have already noticed that you need to clear your throat a lot. Well, that's because caffeine acts as a diuretic, and it flushes all the water out of your system. The loss of that moisture makes the phlegm in your throat more concentrated, thicker. Therefore, you have to clear your throat more. What's happening is that when your body gets dehydrated, it pulls water from tissues that are less vital to survival and sends it to the ones that keep you alive. The mucous membranes and salivary glands, parts of your body that actually make the phlegm, well, they say, hey, don't worry about it. I don't really need the water. Give it to the heart or the kidneys. Give it to my buddy, the brain. I'll get a drink from the bar later. So therefore, they don't have enough water to stop your mouth from getting dry. In addition, because caffeine speeds up your whole metabolism, it stimulates the mucus-producing cells, and they work harder and faster, and they go into overtime, producing higher than normal levels of thick phlegm. It's like a vicious circle, because a faster metabolism also uses more water, which leads you right back to dehydration. Are you a serious coffee drinker? If so, I'm not going to stand in the way of your morning cup of Java. Besides, 1 cup, maybe 2, is not going to really hurt you that much. But I strongly advise you to stop there and switch to decaf or water all through the rest of the day. I mentioned clearing your throat a moment ago. I want to show you the right way to do that. There are people that clear their throat like this. Like they're lions with a nail caught in their throat. That makes the cords redder, more swollen, and does more damage than having all the extra phlegm there to begin with. Here's the perfect way to clear your throat without doing any damage. Close your lips and do this sound. And then swallow. Close your lips, make this sound. And then swallow. That will do more than the lion with the nail sound. It'll get a lot of the phlegm off the cords. This will do a lot more than the incorrect way of clearing your throat. Try it this way. You'll eventually find that your cords are much more happy. Now let's talk about sugar. Well, some doctors believe that excess amounts of sugar may add to the production of thick mucus, and I believe them. But unless you're a diabetic, your body should be able to regulate itself as long as you're drinking enough water. Well, that said, I'd still like to caution you about your sugar intake. Many people, including me, believe that excessive sugar consumption is bad for the voice. One of the negative effects of sugar is what happens soon after you consume it. My best friend Tim, The kind of guy who can eat anything and everything he wants and never gain too much weight, regularly eats bad things. Cinnamon rolls in the morning fried in butter. Snickers bar for his 11 o'clock snack. Burgers and fries for lunch. Donuts and cookies for his afternoon snack. Do you get the picture? By the way, you would never know this by looking at him. He looks fantastic. Anyway, I notice that quite often when he calls me right before lunch to say hi, he sounds a bit sad or depressed. And the truth is, he's just feeling low because of coming down from his 11 o'clock Snickers bar high. The sugar that he had at 11 just picked him up and then dropped him way down less than an hour later. And that's what sugar does. I wouldn't recommend doing a heavy dose of sugar to pump up your system for speaking or presenting. It's too risky. You never know how long the high will last. There you are, right towards the end of the deal-making process with the car salesman. You got the color you want, the tires, the rims. He already threw in the floor mats, and you're haggling over the price of the sunroof. Up until now, you really felt like you had this guy in the palm of your hand. Your energy and charisma filled his little office to the brim. But now, you're starting to fade, getting a little hungry and sleepy. You missed the last thing that he said to you, and you had to ask him to repeat it. He starts to smell blood in the water, and it's definitely yours. You end up paying full price for that sunroof and cursing yourself the whole rest of the day for that one mistake of having a Krispy Kreme donut right before you went into his office. You can always do your own test and see if cutting back on sugar helps you keep a more consistent energy level throughout the day with less high and less low energy swings. And then adjust your diet accordingly. Okay, let's talk a little bit about acid. Carbonated sodas are acidic. If you live in a cold climate, go out in the morning and pour a can of cola right onto your little frosted car windshield and see what happens. The cola just eats away the ice as if it was hydrochloric acid. Or just watch what happens when you put soda and ice cubes together in a glass. The soda completely disintegrates the ice. Well, what happens to this kind of acid inside your body? Actually, many scientists say not that much. In truth, the acid level in your stomach is so high that the soda has no serious negative effect. But I've personally observed that drinking sodas leads to a huge increase in mucus production with many of my clients. And even natural acids like that in citrus fruits have the same negative effect. Citrus in the mouth makes you salivate. And even though that doesn't necessarily make the phlegm thicker, extra saliva, even the watery kind, can still bug you when you're trying to speak and all you can think of is either swallowing or drooling. Many people think that citrus cuts phlegm. But strange as it sounds, the opposite is actually true. I remember being hired to coach the rock band Def Leppard through a European tour. There were hundreds of people working on this tour with trucks and buses, and they had their own plane. It was a huge undertaking. I remember meeting one of Joe Elliott's crew members and noticing that he had a very strange job. And by the way, in case you don't know Def Leppard, Joe's the lead singer. All day long, all this guy did was make a special drink for Joe. Next to the stage, he had a blender, a small refrigerator, and a big bag of lemons. I saw Joe drink this stuff 24 hours a day. After a few days of listening to Joe sing with more phlegm than I thought humanly possible, I went up to the guy and I started to investigate what was in this concoction. First, I tasted it. It was so good. It tasted like warm lemonade mixed with honey. Then I asked him what else was in there. He told me that it contained honey, fresh squeezed lemons, an artificial sweetener, eucalyptus, and an over-the-counter product that was supposed to coat the throat. Joe drank this stuff consistently, all day and night. At the end of one of the rehearsals, I took Joe aside and I told him, I've got some good news and some bad news for you, buddy. You're going to have a lot less thick phlegm, but you're going to have to trade your lemonade in for water. And Joe's response was, lemonade? How can you take away something as innocent as lemonade? But 3 days after the drink disappeared, so did his entire phlegm problem. Let's talk about something a whole lot stronger than lemonade. Alcohol. Now, many of you might know that alcohol dehydrates the body. Well, bad news when you're trying to keep your vocal cords hydrated. But a lot of singers and speakers swear by a drink or two before going up before an audience. The Frank Sinatra syndrome. The truth is, with your first one or two drinks, alcohol does lower your anxiety and is actually a little bit stimulating. Most people have trouble focusing when they're anxious, and that's why they often think that a drink might calm them down a little bit and also make them a little tiny bit more alert. If they continue to drink, however, they feel the sedative effects of the alcohol, which makes the normal performance of every muscle in the body slower and less accurate, clearly affecting both speaking and singing. These effects may show themselves even after one drink if you're like me and you have a low tolerance for alcohol. The choice is yours. As long as you have 4 to 6 hours for your body to break down the alcohol before you need to speak and perform, and you're not an alcoholic or pregnant, a glass of wine a day or a couple of beers is probably fine. Keep in mind that the less you weigh, the less tolerance to alcohol you have. I don't recommend hard liquor simply because its high alcohol content makes it more difficult for the body to deal with. While an average American beer may have between 3 to 5% alcohol, 100-proof whiskey has 50% alcohol content. My guidelines here are, if you have a big presentation or a performance scheduled at 8 p.m., don't drink with dinner. If you need to count on your voice at 10 the next morning, it's fine to have a drink with your evening meal the previous night. Also remember that it's best not to drink without eating. Alcohol alone can lower your blood sugar, and you need normal blood sugar levels to maintain the energy you need to think and make great sounds. People always want to know if dairy products are really bad for you. When I have a student who's always clearing his throat and who has obvious problems with too much phlegm, sometimes all I need to do to completely clear up the problem is eliminate dairy products. For a substantial number of my students, dairy is the troublemaker. And because this is such a common problem, I think it's worth experimenting to see if avoiding dairy would help you. Medically, it's kind of unclear how or why dairy products increase the production of mucus in your air passages and intestinal tract. One theory is that in order to digest dairy products, the body secretes specific pancreatic juices and at the same time releases more mucus into the air passages. Without getting any more technical than that, let me simply add my voice to the millions who see dairy as problematic for anyone who's serious about their voice, and I wholeheartedly advise restraint. One of the main things that the body is allergic to is protein. Most people that have allergies find that proteins are generally the first main cause. So high levels of protein is often very, very difficult for the body to deal with. That's why milk and all the rest of the dairy products are often the number one cause of allergic reactions in the body. If I'm working with a professional musician on the road who tells me, I can't survive without my cheese pizza, I'm somewhat sympathetic. After all, we're talking about a major food group for the rock and roll industry. So I try to suggest a little compromise. I say, okay, we can stop at the pizza place if that's what you have to do. But every other time we go to the pizza place, you have to get pasta with tomato sauce. And by the way, tomatoes are excellent phlegm fighters. So instead of that giant pizza topped with the extra mozzarella, sometimes we're definitely going to go for the pasta. If you're doing dairy to give your body the calcium it needs, there's so many other ways to get that, like broccoli. And your voice will thank you, and the rest of your body will too. Now, what about hot drinks? Are they good for the voice? Many people believe that a nice hot cup of tea is comforting to the voice. But even after you remove the caffeine, take out the lemon, the honey, and the sugar, you still have a problem. The heat. The temperature of any fluid affects the size of the tissues that it comes in contact with. Heat basically causes your blood vessels to open up, allowing the liquid portion of the blood to leak into those tissue spaces, which causes them to swell up. Cold drinks, on the other hand, cause blood vessels to constrict, lowering the amount of fluid in the tissue and causing it to dry. Even though the liquid you drink goes nowhere near the cords, because you remember I told you that the cords live down the air hole, not the food and liquid hole, they're still affected because of all the blood vessels that are in the area, the head, the neck, and the throat. They all respond to the heat of the tea. If you want to be in great voice, drink cool water or warm decaffeinated tea, but try to avoid both hot and iced drinks. What about red meat? Is that bad for my voice? When you eat red meat, your body diverts blood to your stomach and intestines to aid in digestion. This takes blood away from the muscles you use to speak. Digestion is energy intensive, and while it's in progress, there's obviously less energy available to the throat and all of the related muscles. On days when you really need your voice, have something lighter to eat. That way, your body can focus on producing sound and not be diverted by breaking down all that difficult food in your stomach. I also wanted to mention that when a woman is menstruating, she might notice that her voice is not at peak performance. That's because literally there's so much blood going away from the cords that there's not enough blood flow to the cords to keep them happy. So don't freak out when that happens. It'll go away. Well, now that I've basically asked you to stop eating and drinking everything that you love and everything that tastes good, let me give you a little bit of good news. Everybody's different. You might be one of the lucky few who can eat a whole cheese pizza, wash it down with a couple of glasses of lemonade, and see no ill effects at all on your voice. But if you already notice that you're always clearing your throat and that you usually seem to have a lot of extra phlegm, I hope you'll do an experiment. Add more water to your diet. If you can't drink a half a gallon, drink 3 more glasses of water today than you did yesterday. Try cutting back on caffeine. See what happens when you reduce the citrus and the sodas, and give yourself a vacation from dairy products, milk, and cheese. You needn't do everything at once. Play with the variables and see what works best for you. Only you can determine the benefits you're gaining from these changes. And if you can't commit to long-term change, just think about making short-term shifts when you need to count on your voice for an important job or a performance. If you want to sound great on Wednesday, enjoy your dairy foods the weekend before, but cut way back from Sunday night through Wednesday morning. As you cut back on dairy, increase the amount of water that you're drinking. And by the time you step into the spotlight, you'll be able to concentrate on presenting your material rather than worrying that you're clearing your throat way too much. There's nothing remotely pleasant about talking with someone who's always clearing their throat. Ultimately, I can't tell you what to eat and drink, but I will tell you this. Hundreds of my students have taken these suggestions to heart, and they've got the clear, strong voices to show for it. So, what about lozenges and throat sprays? Are they any good for you? My answer is, I don't think you need them. What your vocal cords need is moisture, and they're not getting it from those products. When you suck on a lozenge, the only real benefit comes from swallowing. As I've mentioned, The movement of swallowing actually helps to lubricate the cord slightly. Water is a much better solution. I also find that people run into trouble, especially with products that kind of numb the throat, because they don't address the cause of the problem. In fact, they're just masking it. People come into my studio all the time chewing gum. For some misguided reason, they think that it keeps their throat moist. Well, it doesn't. It actually does just the opposite. Have you noticed that the gum's dry when it comes right out of the pack? Have you noticed that when you take it out of your mouth after chewing it for a while, that it's dry again? Well, if the gum is dry before you put it in your mouth, and it's dry when you take it out of your mouth, what do you think is keeping it moist when it's in your mouth? The answer is, the gum is using up all of the saliva that you need for speaking. It's all simply being wasted to keep that goofy gum moist. Here's another little issue. I've heard that spending time in wet saunas is really good for the voice. Is that true? Wet sauna. Sounds good, doesn't it? All that steam must be doing something fabulous for your vocal cords. Well, I wish it were true. But remember what happens when you sit in a sauna or a whirlpool? You sweat, and you become dehydrated. Now, making your body lose water only takes moisture away from the cords, and that's hard on them and your voice. What about humidifiers? Are they also bad? Humidifiers, I'm happy to say, are wonderful. Sitting in front of a cool mister and breathing is great for your voice. I like cool misters more than the hot, though if you already have a hot one, that's fine. When you inhale, water droplets actually do come in contact with the vocal cords and topically moisten the tissues. It feels wonderful, and it is. Most of the time, by the way, I only suggest using a humidifier when you're feeling vocally under the weather. The rest of the time, the body should do quite well keeping the cords hydrated, especially now that you're drinking a lot more water. Somebody once asked me an interesting question. Is swimming bad for the voice? Swimming, I said, is great exercise, but actually the chlorine can irritate the linings of your nose, your mouth, and your throat. I know you're not drinking the pool water, but you can't help but ingest a little bit of it when your head goes in and out of the water. So if you're a swimmer, just kind of watch out for that irritation and make sure you're still drinking a lot more regular water. Okay, you knew that I'd bring smoking up sometime, right? Well, here goes. Let me start by telling you how smoking affects the vocal cords, because we can just skip all of the well-documented other negative effects. Remember that there's two holes in the throat, one for water and one for air. And because of that, the vocal cords don't get moistened directly when you drink water. But when you inhale anything, cigarettes, cigars, marijuana, the smoke goes straight to the cords. Take a drag and a hot chemical-filled cloud begins to dry up the natural moisture sitting on the vocal cords, reversing most of the good work that you've already done. Smoking is the one place that I really have to draw the line. No amount of smoking is healthy for the cords. I tell people that if they want to study with me, they have to stop smoking. I do have some students who are legitimately dealing with their serious addictions by cutting back. But in my heart of hearts, I believe that speaking and smoking are opposite functions. And if you want to speak well, you have to make the change and eventually quit. Lots of smokers point to Frank Sinatra as an example of a person who could just light up on stage and keep on singing. But I guarantee you, my friends, that if Frank had quit, he would have had 100 times better voice at the end of his career than he actually wound up with. You say, he was good. I say he could have been a lot better. And that's the level that interests and satisfies me. Incidentally, Sammy Davis Jr., his buddy, died of throat cancer, which was directly related to his smoking. The key point is that any smoked inhalant, whether cigarettes, cigars, whatever, directly irritates the vocal cords with heat and chemicals. It also damages the lungs and eventually decreases the amount of air available for communication. I don't want to seem intolerant. I know most of the people that are smoking don't really want to be smokers. They're trying to quit. And I am so on your side about this. So do what you can. And while you're still smoking, cut back and at the very least, increase your water intake, even more than a half a gallon of water a day, to help us compensate. What about secondhand smoke or having to work in a smoky environment? Unfortunately, you'll get many of the same drying effects from regular smoking from just being in a smoky room. So if you do business with smokers or have meetings in very smoky clubs, you'll need to help your voice by drinking a ton of water before, during, and after the meeting. Moving on, I want to make one little note concerning cocaine. It's a powerful vasoconstrictor, and that limits the supply of blood to the tissues to the point that they can actually die. You might be able to speak when you're high, but the long-term effects of cocaine will send your voice straight into an early retirement, if the life problems don't. You know, most people think that the voice is no good in the morning, and it gets better as the day progresses. Is that what happens with you? So many speakers are adamant about not wanting to make presentations or appearances in public or the office in the early morning because they figure that their voice just doesn't wake up until much later. Actually, their voices would be fine at any hour if they used our consistent and effective way of warming up their voices, using all of the exercises and the general warm-ups which I'm offering you. A number of my students are dancers, and some of them would never consider getting out of bed without stretching. So if you rely on your voice to get great sound, well, you need to build a little vocal stretching into your day with the daily warm-ups. I know you don't want to be doctors, but sometimes I just can't help throwing a little bit of technical stuff at you. So, on that note, I wanted to show you why you sound different and lower in the morning. The reason is fluid collects in the tissues of the throat from basic lack of use during the night, and mucus builds up, and the throat's dry from mouth breathing during the night. When the cords are dry, they just don't move as well. And in order to make higher pitches, the cords need to move together and dampen until they can.
You sound low.
A lot of you probably work unusual hours, sometimes all night, or 14-hour shifts. So what does that do to the voice? Well, some of my clients do have weird schedules. I got a glimpse of that one time when I was traveling in the 90s with the band Poison, which was a little rock band on their Flesh and Blood tour. As fate would have it, I slept under the bunk of the lead singer on that tour bus and basically kept the same hours as he did. The schedule was grueling. They might finish a show at 11 or 12 at night, but then it was time for meet and greet, talking to the press, executives, backstage folks, as well as any fans who wanted autographs. It was typically 3 a.m. before we got on the bus, and after the excitement of performing, nobody wanted or could go to sleep. We'd get into the next town at 6 or 7 in the morning, and that's when we'd go to sleep, getting back up around noon and starting the whole process again. Now, I realize that most of you are not rock stars on a tour bus traveling from town to town. Still, I bet many of you have stayed up all night at some time in your career, cramming for a meeting or trying to make a deadline on a particular project. Well, this kind of routine is really hard on the voice. In fact, any schedule that keeps you talking more than 12 hours a day takes its toll. If your voice was perfect, you could speak effortlessly nonstop. But for most of us humans, any amount of vocal work, speaking or singing, beyond 12 hours pushes you into vocal twilight time, when your voice is susceptible to its greatest damages. Your whole body's tired and you're obviously more dehydrated. If your schedule is crazy, try to give your voice a break after that 12-hour mark. My best recommendation, though, is to get enough sleep. It doesn't matter all that much when you get your 7 or 8 hours, but you still need it. Vocal wear and tear is cumulative, and rest is a great way to recover. A biological clock sets physical and mental changes in motion as the sun sets and the moon appears, slowing your body down to prepare for the anticipated sleep. The best way to keep this natural process from affecting you adversely is to get adequate rest, take excellent care of your body, and drink a ton of water. Later on in the program, I'm going to be giving you a daily warm-up session with great exercises to warm up your chest, middle, and head voice. Just in case you wanted to know if your kids could practice along with those exercises, the answer is yes. Your daughters need to use the female exercise session, and your sons, if they haven't hit puberty yet, should also practice with the female exercises. Don't expect to hear middle if your child is under 5, though. Just let your very, very young speakers move back and forth from chest voice to whatever voice is on the top. It'll do them a world of good. And why not start them out young and put them on the right path that'll give them incredible advantages later on in life? When it comes to your kids and the exercises, the aim is to break down the walls that could otherwise keep them locked in either chest or head voice. As they smoothly work through the crossover points and get a little older, their voices will be making way for the middle that will miraculously appear as they grow. Until then, the single most valuable thing you can do is make sure that they don't get caught in chest voice and strain. And of course, make sure they're having fun. Okay, now that we're at the end of this session, I just wanted to say thank you for being such good sports. It's not always that fun to have somebody tell you what you should or shouldn't eat and drink. And I know that some of the suggestions I've made in this session no doubt seemed extreme. 1/2 gallon of water a day, cutting out all the dairy foods. Yet these are the tested techniques that have resulted in excellence for both the professionals I teach and the students who are just starting out. I hope you'll take this information and just run with it. Experiment. Eliminate the physical obstacles that are standing between you and a fabulous voice. You'll transport yourself to the next level, a level where your mind, your body, and your voice work together for the betterment of the whole package so that you can comfortably take your place on top of the world.